I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Forever Dog.
Hi, Adventure Cateers. It's me, Ben Blacker.
And me, Ben Acker.
The Thrilling Adventure Hour is returning with brand new episodes starting Monday, October 29th, available on all the podcast apps, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google. What do you use for your podcast?
Whatever's on my phone.
Please subscribe to our Patreon page right now so that we can pay for everything and give you great stuff in return. You won't be paying for this episode. This is free.
Gratis.
It's patreon.com/thrillingadventurehour. So we hope you enjoy these new episodes. I'm confident you will.
Then I'm confident that they will. You will. You guys will.
This is Ben Acker.
And Ben Blacker.
See you in hell.
Not if I see you first.
And now, coming to you from Hollywood, Los Angeles, California, America, it's the nation's favorite new time podcast in the style of old time radio, The Thrilling Adventure Hour.
From my beginning, my promise was endless. My reach is greater now than my promise, and when seeking my equal, you shall find only none. This is so, as mountains are mountains, and trees are trees, and rivers and oceans are as they are, and so I am, as I am, the king of coffee. Hear how it sounds. King of coffee. Though the words do ring melodious as a nightingale's canticle, there are but those for whom the title stirs within them nothing. Nothing. It is for them as but the dirt beneath another's finger's nails. And why? Why, if I am me, and I am, do those who know it not and know me not possess such enormity of ignorance as to fill all the skies of England with? They do not feel my grip upon them because they do not drink coffee. Like Peter, they deny me. No! them. I do not grant them my gift, and I wish upon them plague. A plague that robs them of their squandered mouths. Then, banished mouth, they shall but perish. Slow crying, or would cry, but cannot, for mouths they do no longer possess. But no, it is the crown's burden to suffer the wretched, that they may one day become their better selves. If yet you have not, I beg you a beg that does not befit a king. Please, for thine own sake and for the crown, drink work juice.
You're welcome. Wurtjuice and the radio divisions underwritten by the Wurtjuice Corporation are just the thing for every occasion and no occasion.
Ooli, 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 north or south, you got to give that guy, give him some mouth to mouth. Ooli, 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 talked or sung, you got to breathe that breath, breathe it into his lungs.
Good morning. Welcome to the Thrilling Adventure Hour panel at C2E2. How are you? I'm John Ross Bowie. As of 20 minutes ago, I am moderating this panel. What's the worst that could happen? We're going to go down real quick, and everyone's going to introduce themselves, and I'm going to ask some questions, and you're going to ask some questions, and we'll get to know each other. This will be fun. To my immediate right, take it away.
Hello, I'm Ben Acker. I write the Thrilling Adventure Hour sometimes.
Hi, I'm Mark Evan Jackson.
Hi, Janet Varney.
I am Timothy Amundsen.
I'm Mark Gagliardi.
I'm Craig Kukowski.
I am Scott Adson.
I'm Autumn Reeser.
My name is Ben Blacker. I also write the show with Ben Acker.
Drop it. Drop the mic. Drop the mic.
And I am Hal Lublin.
That's a very gentle way of dropping the mic that I encourage all of you to try at home. The point is made, but no property is damaged. Let's start with a brief origin story. Acker and Blacker, you meet at Syracuse University?
Correct.
And you are introduced solely on the basis of your remarkably similar names?
Correct.
That is
points.
Not why you start. That is not why you start writing together. What brought you to the idea of a live radio play in Los Angeles?
For those who don't know, well, we lived in Los Angeles, so that was a start. For those who don't know, Ben and I had written a Sparks Nevada Marshall on Mars feature film script. Do not ask about it. It is 12 years old at this point and terrible. We've learned a lot since then. And we had a bunch of our friends over to read it, and we had, including Mark Gagliardi, was there playing Tex?
Yep.
Is that right? And We had never really heard our stuff read aloud by professional actors, and it sounded great.
You still
great.
Haven't.
And it was inspiring, and we walked away saying there must be a way to kind of continue telling these stories as well as get this on its feet and have professional actors reading material that people hopefully want to see and exploit our friends a little bit.
You're not following up with that?
And so we did.
So when the show started 10 years ago at M-Bar in Los Angeles, am I correct?
Correct.
What was your end game? Did you have a
we barely had
this
a
is
begin
it.
Game.
This is it. We're doing it. We just wanted to get on this stage.
You're right. Sweet. I'm glad I could help.
It's going to take us 12 years, but we're going to get to Chicago.
LA to Chicago is not your standard show business trajectory, but
it's a great theater town, though.
So tell me about that. Tell me, as much as you remember, and anyone else who was there, please chime in, what was that first show like? For those of you who don't know, and there will be boos and cries, I know, but Philly Adventure Hour just wrapped its 10-year run of monthly shows at Largo in Los Angeles. Very emotional evening. It has not podcast yet, so we'll go light on spoilers. But let's go back. What was that first show at M-Bar like? Did you immediately know, like, oh, we've caught lightning in a bottle? Or anyone who was in there, chime in.
It was a different show. It was the basic elements were there. There was a Sparks Nevada. There was a Beyond Belief. Mark Evan Jackson, Mark Gagliardi, Paul and Padgett were there. But it was a little more theater of the mind. At least this was how Ben and I scripted it. It was some very long, ornate passages about using your imagination. And we realized very quickly that if you're going to have a long live audience and you want to know if the show is going well, they need to laugh.
Anyone can say, "Oh, that was a good show," but you can't tell.
early on, there was also that sort of wink of the radio audience because it wasn't being podcast. It was only a live show. There was no recording of anything, so there were a lot of bits that were like Presto Prescott, professor of prestidigitation. The radio magician who Hal narrated what he was doing, which I thought was really funny.
This is Derek Hughes, who is a Los Angeles actor and magician. He's an actual magician. He would be on stage doing tricks, and then Hal would be narrating his thing. And Ben and I would kind of write a ramp up to the trip about how he found this trick in deep, dark Africa and all this stuff. It was a fun bit.
The worst was, in order to write the things about the trick, he felt like he had to show us how the tricks were done. I don't want to know that.
Oh, that's a bummer. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. What do you mean we're done? It's magic.
No, Mark, it's totally magic. How much in the way of research into actual old radio plays did the bands do? I think I've answered my own question, but go ahead.
We have encyclopedic knowledge. Ask us anything.
How much research did you do into the old? Damn it! Into old style radio plays. Did you listen to The Shadow? Did you listen to?
We heard an episode of The Shadow.
All right.
The Shadow is impossible to listen to now. Of all of those old radio shows, it's the one that sounded like it was recorded in a shower with KFC buckets over everyone's head.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's impossible to listen to The Shadow. So I'm glad that we have quality microphones and good sound people at Largo.
So what was the... At what point during the show's run did you start podcasting? I don't remember.
It was 5 years in.
5 years
in. When we made the move to Largo, we started actually getting good recordings of everything and started podcasting. Fairly soon after that.
At what point did you realize you had, and I don't use this term lightly, kind of a global phenomenon on your hands? You guys are going to Australia next month. You guys are going to New Zealand next month. You guys have been all over the United States. What point did the emails start to take on a certain international flavor?
Maybe only a year ago.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was maybe a year and a half ago that we started doing more conventions, kind of getting out there a little more. We did the crossover with Welcome to Night Vale. we did the crossover with Wits, and that was only 6 months ago. But yeah, it was really only about a year and a half ago that we started to see a real effect. And I think we've talked about the first time we saw that we had an audience outside of L.A. was the first time we went to New York, which was 2013. And we've told the story before, but I will tell it again briefly. But, you know, we all kind of realized backstage that they might have no idea who we are. Mm-hmm. We sold this on the back of Paul and John Hodgman, and they might not know what this show is. And then Hal came out and started the Sparks intro with Kids Shine Your Astro Spurs, and the crowd went crazy. And it was an amazing moment for all of us backstage.
Well, it's funny because I've witnessed, I was a fan of the show for years before I got a chance to start doing it, so I'm uniquely qualified to be up here. But I remember one particular show where Mark Evan Jackson and Mark Gagliardi, you guys were given a flag that had been overseas.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, tell us about that.
An active duty Air Force service member, Jenny Nelson, it was an episode where Nathan Fillion was with us as well, and she was back home on a hiatus, and she brought us...
I think it's called Leave. Los Angeles.
She didn't get picked up for another year.
They had wrapped the war before the back 13, and...
Jesus.
And she...
That's all right, Jackson. It's I'm always good. Pilot season in the Air Force. Right?
Oh! Thank you so much. Good night.
Please don't reward that behavior. She brought us a flag, a U.S. flag, a combat-flown U.S. flag, and a certificate, and... I could lose it right now just thinking about it. And we took photographs with it. Like, it was very, very moving. Is that, do you have that, Blacker? Is that with you?
Yes.
Yeah. I think she had presented it to you because she had been listening to the Sparks Nevada podcast while overseas.
They fly combat missions. She was a crew member on an AWACS plane, like an airborne command and control jet. And they would, on their way to the combat mission, they would all listen to the Thrilling Adventure Hour in their headset. They would pipe it throughout the airplane, which is bananas.
Interesting side note to that. She met her fiancé and later husband through the Thrilling Adventure Hour. She got him into it. And then later on, I officiated their wedding in California.
In character?
From L.A.
Were you spooky Hal or folksy Hal?
Yeah, I gave them the option, and they wanted... will you include a Martian wedding blessing? And I was like, sure, that's a thing. So I turned to the Bens to have them write something, which I then rewrote because their family is observant of religion. Maybe the Martians are a little bit different about it. Yeah, it was vaguely blasphemous, but it was very nice, and her family was very cool about it, and that was a neat thing to sort of have them come in and bring that flag and then become part of the family.
Were you spooky Hal or folksy Hal when you...
I did both. I'll do spooky Hal if they ever break up. They won't. It's going to be a great, strong wedding. Yeah. Can you officiate a divorce? You can't do that? I feel like that'd be pretty spooky.
You've probably figured this out, but in the script, when Hal does his voiceovers, and that's him at the beginning of Sparks Nevada, that's him at the beginning of Beyond Belief, the character name is either Spooky Hal or Folksy Hal.
And there are others. There's Newsreel Hal.
Yes.
There's James Mason Hal.
Oh, I haven't heard James Mason Hal. How does that go?
James Mason Hal used to do the narration for Colonel TikTok.
That's such an incredible James Mason, I want to keep my small daughter away from it.
Bring it to me, John. I want to meet your daughter.
Nope, that's not okay. That is not okay. As long as we're on the Sparks Nevada theme.
Yeah, and let's stay here.
Yeah, okay. Mark Evan Jackson, how has Sparks evolved, without going too spoilery, since the last episode is not podcast yet? How has Sparks evolved over the 10 years?
When will the last episode podcast? Because I'm tired of not talking about this.
Not till August.
Really?
Yeah. We can do it sooner, but then they'll be done. Is that what you want? Do you want that? All right.
That was so simultaneous.
I'll send it to you.
Early on, I feel like Ben wrote Sparks as a legitimate hero, which I guess he still is. But he was more of a rough and tumble cowboy, right? He was he was kind of a leading man, and I think he had fewer foibles.
Quieter too. He was like a Gary Cooper type.
Okay, which I found boring.
Doesn't work on radio.
Yeah. But you know, there's so much, and I think this is a testament to their writing. There's so much that was there on the page day one, like the at the very first rehearsal when I saw the words I'm ellipsis from Earth. It was like, oh well, I know how to do this, and so much of it just in the very first episode when we get to the bridge of the Sparks Nevada theme, on the plains of the Red Planet, I uphold the law. That's something that's evolved because for no reason later I started going law wah, just for fun, and I kept it. But early on, the very first episode, I sang that in kind of a Dudley Do-Right voice for no reason, just that middle bit. And once we did it and we came back for a second episode of the next month, it was like, well, I guess that's canon now. I should probably do it. And for 10 years, I've done it for that reason, just out of sort of an honor and respect for the show. But the Sparks was the heroic elements of Sparks were there from the beginning. The stuff that makes him kind of dumb is that came from me.
Mark, how has Croach kind of changed? We've heard him. He's learned so much about Earthling culture over the past 10 years.
I think the emotional thing is the big thing for Croach. That it started. That Croach started very Spock-like and has grown and learned emotions and.
He's gotten lippy.
He's gotten lippy, yeah. Which Fuck is the milk. Most fun part, to get lippy at Sparks. That was one of the strange things last night in the show, because the comic books are sort of, it's newer, it's earlier in their relationship. Mm-hmm. So to play a version of, bless you, to play a version of Croach that isn't as in touch with the human emotions was a little difficult last night to try and pull that back. And like the idea that this very stoic, logical Martian 10 years later is going to be married to going out with the Red Plains Rider and having romantic entanglements, and
it's just gross.
And these
it's just the worst.
It's all right. You have your lady. It's that's been the big thing, is learning humanity.
Speaking of Sparks Nevada and emotion, that leads us seamlessly to Janet Varney.
See, you have your lady.
You kind of hopped onto a moving train when you joined Sparks Nevada regularly. What was that like?
I had been doing the show. I mean, I think I've been doing it since kind of the beginning of Largo almost.
Yeah,
it's been
very early
years,
on.
I think. And the only thing I had really done, I mean, I did small things, and I had been doing Donna Henderson in Beyond Belief, and so on a practical level, I couldn't believe I was going to be in the first half of the show, because for me always it was like sing the first song. Then you're down about 45 minutes backstage listening to the other show. And but I was really excited, but I was a little nervous, because I know that the fans love Sparks and love that world. And these guys are very talented. I wanted to sort of be able to fit in and have a reason for being there that didn't feel like I was just jumping in and making you fall in love with me. But I loved it, and I loved the way that the character was pitched to me. I think Acker sort of said, you know, give it this sort of very sincere True Grit kind of, which is why I was like, it sounds like you want her to have braids. actors.
But it is—it's a testament to Janet because the audience, especially the live audience at Largo and in New York, are very protective of Sparks and of Mark. And, you know, so it really was a risky thing bringing you in to do this, like, last year and a half. And they embraced you much more quickly than even Ben and I had anticipated. Oh. I remember sitting in our office and we're going, how are we going to make the audience fall in love with Ginny as Sparks is? And they beat us to it. They were there from episode two, yeah.
Was the second step of that conversation, how do we keep busy from hating Janet?
Never an issue. It was never an issue.
Oh, biz.
An impossible task to achieve. So every show begins with Sparks Nevada, ends with Beyond Belief. What do we call the second act? We just call it the second act? Or we call it
the middle cream bit. In the Oreo, right?
The middle bit. The middle bit. We have a couple of cast members from Middle Bits. Let's talk for a moment.
Just a moment, though, because...
Sure. No, we'll get back to Sparks. Let's talk about Amelia Earhart, Fearless Flyer, for a moment. Autumn, I love that segment so much because it's so loyal to the period of the 1940s, so loyal to that radio period. And there's something... And I didn't notice this for a while, but there's something a little daft about Amelia. You know, there's just something where you're like, wow, she's not the, tell
she's,
us about.
She's a narcissist.
Okay. Tell us about Amelia and how you approach it.
The first time, when I joined the show, when it was at M-Bar, and Padgett was doing Amelia, and I saw one episode of the show, and then the second episode I came in and did the show, and they had me playing Amelia, and so the only thing I was thinking is I had to live up to what Padgett had done. So I basically... So I did a bunch of research into, like, 1940s movies and ended up kind of doing a combination of what Padgett had done mixed with, like, a bastardized Katharine Hepburn voice. And it was super
fun. Which sounded like?
Amelia Earhart, Fearless Flyer.
Great.
Kind of like that. But I think Amelia, my favorite thing about her is she's completely convinced of her own greatness and that she is here to save the world. And I just love that sort of, like, all-American apple pie, like, 50s sense of we can do it about her. She's really, really fun to play.
I think the first time I did the show, I played a Nazi in the Christmas show.
As you do.
And it was, so actually you have a special place in my heart, Autumn, because it was an Amelia Earhart episode was when I made my TAH debut.
I always feel bad for the guest stars when they come in and the first thing they give them is a Nazi, because it's like, hi, come to our show with a German accent. It's always, I really always feel bad for them.
Thank you. I accept your pity.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We tend to ask guest stars, you know, because they can play in our show, really anything, things they don't get to play in TV shows and movies and stuff. So we say, like, if there's anything you've ever really wanted to play, let us know, because it'll help us think of ideas to just take yours. And more often than not, they're like, there's Nazis in your show, right? That seems fun. Which is not a reflection of them as people so much as villains are fun to play, I think.
No, they absolutely are. Villains are absolutely fun, and villains with crazy accents that sound cartoonish when amateur actors are doing them are extra fun. Let's talk for a moment about Moonshine Holler. Which I really have a soft spot for, because it's so... There's it's never maudlin, but there's a sentimentality running through Moonshine Holler that maybe isn't in the other parts because of its main narrative thrust, which is, Craig Kukowski, what is the main goal of Moonshine Holler?
Well, Banjo Bindlestuff, formerly Jasper Manor Lodge, is trying to...
Wait, I thought he wasn't.
He's trying to reunite with his hobo princess. And find the fingerless glove that fits only her.
Right?
Why is that not a movie?
Fine question. I'm always struck by how that show, again, that part of the show always manages to be a little sort of teary and heartfelt without ever getting really overdone. Do you, are you conscious of that walk, of that sort of balance you have to strike, or are you just that awesome?
I'm just thinking of the last episode that we did.
Careful.
At Largo. I won't reveal anything. It was very emotional for me and Hal. And we just love playing those characters. And it's, I think, Thrilling Adventure, for all of the genre homages and great joke writing, it's really a show about relationships, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. And Sparks and Croach are the heart of that segment. Frank and Sadie and Gummy and Banjo is another just great relationship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's partially just my affection for Hal and Banjo's affection for Gummy. And it's also, it's a very melodramatic piece, too. Yeah. And, you know, they all kind of follow the same arc of some, you know, maiden in a town falls in love with Banjo. He has a dramatic soliloquy where he wonders whether he should reveal his true identity or not. And then ends up saving the day somehow. And then that lone rattler is off in the distance, and they've got to head back out on the rails again. So it's very melodramatic and emotional, I think. But I try to add as many pathos to every character I play as possible, including the Nazis.
How did you come across Gummy's voice?
So I was raised on old-time radio as well. My father would buy these cassette packs, and we'd listen to them all the time. Among which was the Jack Benny show. Jack Benny had a valet named Rochester, who was played by an actor named Ernie Anderson, I believe is his name. And that voice, not the cultural implication of the voice, but just being able to create that intonation with your voice, because it's kind of a feat. So I'd always sort of practice it, just like it's number one, the voice, and number two, it horrified me that that was a characterization of African Americans. Like, that was what 1940 radio, like, they would just show up and go, "What can I do for you? Can I get your bag?" So, taking that voice and using it for a white guy seems to sort of level it out, and just seemed like that's the kind of voice a hobo would have. He's been on the road a lot. It's that Dust Bowl era, so he's inhaling a lot of dirt. So it sort of made sense that that would be, like, if there's a Yoda of hobos, then that's what he would sound like.
We will draw attention now to my fellow guest stars in the show who pop in occasionally, and it really does feel like you're jumping onto a moving train when you come in. It's super fun, and you have script in hand, but it's still sort of exhilaratingly terrifying. Timothy Amundsen, what are... did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Yeah. What are some of the favorite things that they've let you do on Thrilling Adventure Hour?
Nazi.
Sure. That's a given. Let's just go. Everyone loves playing Nazis. You would too.
The gay Cockney fishmonger will always be close to my heart.
We'll wait, what? Which one was this? Which one was the gay Cockney fishmonger?
Bob McCrum's in Colonel TikTok.
Oh, and what might he have sounded like?
What?
What would he have the gay Cockney fishmonger? What would he have sounded like?
Well, he sort of sounded like this, didn't he? I just he really misses him. Decides to pop in and out of his life, doesn't he? Half the time, I'm going to be honest, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You get the script, and either I'm unfamiliar with that bit or that storyline, but they'll quickly fill it in, and you are just encouraged to make a bold choice, which is always a delicious thing for an actor to go, and you just go. And occasionally you get to play a similar thing again, or you get to do that guy again. You can sort of refine it, and it is just being up there. It's not without a net, because these people, you know, there's nothing you can do wrong that they're not going to help you with or fix. And the audience is just, it's just this warm blanket of love the entire time. Yeah. On stage, off stage, coming from the house. It's delightful.
Scott, that's it. What are some... Now, you're a regular performer when the show comes to New York.
Yeah, I live in New York, so I play the Bell House with everybody.
Okay. And what are some fond characters you've gotten a chance to do?
I have a recurring in Sparks. I think he's been on twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Bill Clover.
Sheriff. Yeah, I just started mispronouncing sheriff for no reason but to get a laugh. I really liked him because he just did not want the job and didn't want a position of authority and would defer all the time to the marshal. And I really liked doing that just because it pretty much, I would just look forward to the end of a line, which would be when I get to go, sheriff, or marshal. It's the little victories.
But it was actually, I remember running that with you backstage at Bell House, and it was fascinating watching Scott find that game, because you started out very straightforward, and then as we slid further and further into the script, it would become sheriff, sheriff, sheriff. It was a genius.
Yeah, genius. And and then I've played a bunch of like villainous victims on Beyond Belief, people who transform a lot, which I really love, because the great thing about Ben and Ben is they will very seldom say you're doing this wrong. They will just let you go, and if you feel that you're maybe missing the mark, then you go to them. Otherwise, they're like, we'd love to have you, this is with everybody, we'd love to have you do what you do and enjoy yourself, because this is just fun for everybody, and especially them. They love watching their words. And that's what it is. I get to play several different characters in a scene, and nobody's telling me I'm doing it wrong.
I've said this before, that what has always struck me about the show as a performer is that it is the closest thing that you get to matching that kind of dangerous excitement of high school theater, in the sense that, like, everyone, you show up and everyone looks a little bit nicer than you're used to seeing them. Except for Tompkins, of course. Everyone looks a little nicer than you're used to seeing them. No one really is prepared, but we're gonna give it our all. And that adrenaline rush that you get from like being backstage during the 11th grade production of Fiddler on the Roof is matched, I think, by being backstage at Largo for A Thrilling Adventure. It's really exciting. Let's go down the line real quick before we open up the floor to pick one memory you're gonna take with you from the 10-year run. Start with you, Acker.
No, end with me.
Okay, great.
No, wait, middle with me. Middle with me.
Now there's counting. Mark Evan Jackson.
Oh, good heavens. You won't hear it until August. But the only spoiler I will offer is that Ben and Ben craft the most beautiful not riding off into the sunset, riding off into the sunset. For Sparks that that you could ever hope for.
Janet.
Well, I can't. I mean, I listen. I got to go with How fun it is to be an idiot sometimes, because you get the best surprises from it, which is that when we did our show and were given these astonishing, wonderful puppets, I really did not have any idea at all that I was going to be made a Work Juice player. Because I was like, hey, it's at the end. Who would be mean enough to make you a Work Juice player right before the show ends? That's like super cruel. They're not going to do that. No, but I was backstage and you know, they had called everyone out and for some reason, like, I just didn't have any idea that it was happening. And so I really had what I'm sure will be the closest, thank God, to a pageant moment where
where when my name was called, y'all, I seriously burst into tears. I came out like I had no idea. I feel like a tiara was placed on my head and I was given a wreath like a roses and a sash. I was so emotional about it. And then to get the puppets and then to sing Rainbow Connection with everybody is something that I will never forget. And it was one of the best moments I've had in my life as a performer, truly. And I love these guys.
I don't think I have one specific moment. I've several little moments, and they are when I would show up to the little room where we rehearse and look around and see a movie star across the thing, also reading, is going, "Holy crap! I get to play with him." Michael Sheen was that one day,
oh,
and like, I get to play an Englishman with Michael Sheen. That's amazing. Just being backstage and being in that dressing room and the chaos and who are you? Oh, hi. And just this, again, this feeling of camaraderie with all these people, many of whom you've seen in television and I admire, standing outside, not smoking cigarettes, not drinking whiskey with people, and just really getting to know this group of people. I've Richard Spade, who is also sort of a regular guest star, he and I went to college together, and we've said on several occasions, we bemoan the fact that no group came out of our college education. Like, there was no State, there was no Broken Lizard, there was no troupe, and we feel that this is our troupe. Hmm. And it really, it's a very, very special thing for me to be able to just be a part of it and be here. So thanks.
Actually, we're going to go back to the middle now. Ben just told me he's ready, so let's stop everything. And
I didn't say that. but no, I'll never forget the time that Fillion first did our show. And the specific memory that I have is that he brought who would be our eventual fan base to the program. And it was 3 months in at Largo, and we were finding our footing with that stage. We were finding our audience with it. Like, it was a full house. It wasn't, you know, full to bursting or anything before that. But we got the word out, so this was a huge audience. And the moment that I'll never forget is we sent Gruber out to do a little warm-up, a little hello, and the audience just... we're so excited to be there. The cheer rose up, and I saw Jackson and Mark and Craig look the coolest I've ever seen anyone look. They heard, oh, they're here, and we know what to do. Like, it was the Reservoir Dogs walking down the street. Like, it was the coolest, like, they belong to us now. With their eyes.
Back to you, Gagliardi. Sorry about that.
Oh, please. I will always defer to Acker.
Thanks.
It, for me, there's a million, and that Rainbow Connection moment was, like, that was a magical thing. But I think the thing that most vividly comes to mind is the beginning of the show. There are three moments that happen at the beginning of every show that I will always hold on to. That is, I share a hug with Hal and Craig and Annie on stage, and I check in with my marshal and report for duty. And then the band starts playing. That moment is really special to me.
Kukowski.
Other than the puppets, thank you, Jamie. Which I think would be...
Jamie and her team made
right
the puppets.
There. Wait,
stand
Jamie,
up, Jamie. Stand up. If you follow the show on social media, you saw that the Worktruce players all got commemorative puppets that were designed by Jamie, who just stood up, and they're amazing. You can see the photos online. They're great.
One of them is at the booth, right?
Yeah. One of them is right.
Oh, it's one of them is right here.
Philip Fathom
is actually joining us here.
Stand
yeah.
up.
Amazing. They're amazing.
So that's number one, but the final show... one thing I liked is that we had so many guests, like
30 guests. I don't know. But you guys didn't really do any stunt casting for it. They weren't like any new superstars who hadn't done the show came in. Everybody had done the show before, and some of them dating back to M-Bar, and some of them had not done the show since M-Bar. And, you know, like Yuri and Tara and Common Rotation, you know. And it just felt like, it just reminded me that it's all a big family. It just felt like there's so many friends coming in. You know, it wasn't guest stars, it was just friends.
Yeah. You know, we don't... We don't rehearse it that vigorously. What happens generally is we sit backstage and we read through the script once, about a half hour before curtain, and it's really just to make sure we're not mispronouncing words. And we all give it about 50 to 51%. And there's a great joy in then the show starting and you walk out to your mic and... everybody is doing something you haven't seen them do yet. And so you're watching kind of a crucible of creation right there. It's happening right there. They may have had in their mind whatever. They haven't tried it yet, and it's happening right in front of you. And it's all very spontaneous and playful, and people go off book, and it's just a real joy to be up there on that tightrope. And sometimes you fall off. I remember, oh, God, it was great. I was doing Beyond Belief, and I did something that made Paget and Paul F. laugh. And I felt like it was, I got very emotional. I felt like they put a tiara on my head.
Huh.
And it was, it's like in my work on stage, I don't want to break. I hate breaking, and I don't want to do it when I'm doing live TV or whatever. It's just a no-no, and it's really very unprofessional. I don't like seeing it. But in that situation, I'm all for it.
I think some of my favorite moments are guest star moments. Like when we, in the rehearsal process, when we were first doing the show at M-Bar, and then for a while at Largo, we would have once a week rehearsals before the show. We don't do that anymore. It's just right before the show that we rehearse. But for a time, we were more professional. And... you couldn't listen to the music in advance before the podcast, obviously. And so the guest stars would just show up at rehearsal. We'd be like, okay, and now we're going to sing this song that you've never heard before. It'll be fine. And like watching the look, this is one of my favorite moments, on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face in rehearsal when we were like, oh yeah, you're singing a song by yourself. Oh, you've never heard it before? It's fine. We'll play it for you right now and then you can do it tomorrow. And watching the look on his face just go, that's not happening. That's one of my favorite moments.
mine are a couple. Something that Ben and I sort of discovered about storytelling as we went through, and it's a thing that we learned from stuff we love, like Buffy and The West Wing, and those are good shows. is not to give the audience what they want or what they say they want, but to give them... an inevitable surprise. And so we kind of got to do that in the show a couple of times where it just worked perfectly. Like, from the time we sat down and talked about it in our office going, can we get away with this? Will they be so mad at us? To that time it happened on stage. And one was after the whole Jib Janine saga, who was a shape-shifting Jupiter spy, to do the episode where... Sparks and Croach and the characters are talking about Cactoid Jim, and here comes Cactoid Jim, and then Paul comes out as Cactoid Jim, followed 5 minutes later by Fillion, was so satisfying. And a similar thing in Beyond Belief, when we opened the curtain, this was just a few months ago, and I think we just put the podcast out, when we opened the curtain on Paul and John Hamm, instead of Paul and Paget, and it made me laugh so much.
Oh, the audience was simultaneously.
Yeah,
I am so mad. I am so excited.
Yeah, it was amazing to hear. You could hear the audience crest of like they started to applaud just because they do when that curtain opens and they're ready to see Paul and Paget, and then it dipped a little bit, And then they realized it was John Hamm. And it wrote, it was amazing to hear. And then, you know, every month there is a moment that it didn't strike me until maybe the past 6 months that this is my favorite moment of the show. And it's when the show is over and the thank yous are going on. And Hal and Gagliardi are bringing out the actors one by one. And then they're bringing out the guest stars. And then, and I'm standing in the wings with Aaron Ginsberg, our director, and Todd Cooper, our curtain man. And it's just the three of us there watching this thing at the end of a long night of work. And there's such joy on stage, and it's unbelievably satisfying. And I will miss that very much.
As far as on stage goes, I think the middle segments of the final two shows, which I know have not come out yet, there was something kind of beautiful about the way the Bens threaded the needle on a lot of different segments. It was really fun to perform and to sort of see everybody. It felt like the best, almost like the best work of those segments. Like it sort of built upwards the whole time, which is nice. Another one for me was doing an ad called Philadelphia Story with Paul F. Tompkins. Because we're both from Philadelphia, it's the both of us doing horrendous Philadelphia accents. And the fact that we both giggle and laugh like children while doing it, we've never gotten through it clean, is a really like special experience for me. And then in a general sense, just this group of people that I've been with for 10 years, that's a long time to know anybody and to have a friendship. And where our lives have gone in those 10 years is pretty incredible. And we've all been there with each other, and we've met a lot of great new friends along the way, people who I've respected and looked up to long before I ever met them. So that's, you know, it's very rare as a performer to have an experience like this once, let alone for 10 years. So that's, I really cherish that.
I just want to say, first of all, not to derail, but you are doing such a kick-ass job, John Ross Cowie.
Oh, I'd have left more. If I was really great, I'd have left more time for questions.
I can't believe you didn't know for 20 minutes, that, until 20 minutes before, you're an ace. Did you talk about a memory? And also, just to quickly acknowledge, it is so hard every time we come out and travel without core members. It is hard. It is very hard being here without Annie Savage and Padgett Brewster and Paul F. Tompkins. Like, it's very hard for us. It's not like we're like, oh, here we all are. We feel their absence acutely, as we know you do. So we love them and we wish they were here.
Indeed. Indeed. Real quick, getting to play Clark Gregg's husband. Duh. Twice. Let's go to questions. There's a mic right there in the center. Yes, by all means, just a feeding frenzy. We don't have time for as many as I'd like, so let's keep them brief and one sentence, and we'll go. Sir, take it away. The floor is yours.
I'm Jimmy from Michigan.
Hi, Jimmy from Michigan.
And I just had a question for the panel. In an episode of Moonshine Holler with Just Desserts, everybody kind of spiraled and went off book. And do any of you have a favorite memory of going off book other than that episode?
That same, actually, during that same episode, the pages were double printed, so double sided, which is very rare. So it's hard. Like the whole thing is like, I don't want to lose my place. I have to remember. I flip it and then turn the script over. And I had a line at the top of a page on the other side, and I missed it. And Craig said something to me about it, and I went to the back wall, and he was giving a speech, and then he did the same thing. That was a fun kind of off script moment.
I just realized I didn't say Busy Phillips. Oh, my God. I couldn't love her more. As I imagine people being like, boy, she really does not like Busy.
Man, she hates you,
more.
Janet.
One of my
Janet,
favorite people
she can't
in the universe.
Stand you.
She's just always very busy shooting, always, 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 and has two small children. Okay.
Craig, what was... you were doing something recently in a German accent, and there was a very sticky word, impossible to pronounce.
Intricacies.
Which your whole throat closes while you try to say that in a German accent. And I feel like I pushed you to keep going, and I feel like Nathan Fillion pushed you to keep going.
Yeah. You wouldn't let me off the hook.
Right.
And then it was already written in the script. I think the line that Nathan had was like, you stumbled into that.
Right.
Was what Ben and Ben had written. And after, like, improvising around me not being able to say this word for like 3 minutes, Nathan was like, well, you just stumbled and stumbled and stumbled into that.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I live here in Chicago.
Hi, Amanda from Chicago.
Hi. So my question is for the Bens. So you guys have obviously created so many great characters.
And yes.
Also kind of embarking on creating kind of a character-based podcast with a friend of mine. And so I'm wondering, what is some advice you guys have for developing characters as part of a writing team, and how you keep from getting too attached to, like, the character you came up with?
Do you keep from getting too attached to the character you come up with?
Or, like, territorial.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that, I mean, that's easy. It's, you both have to put that aside and say what is best for the show. And what is best for the character. These characters become very, very real, especially once actors become involved.
Right.
You know, I said this online, but I'll say it again. Sparks Nevada has three authors. Mark Evan Jackson is as much a part of that creative process as Ben and I are. He told us that he is. As far as creating memorable characters or strong characters, give them layers. You know, they... Nobody is just one thing. They should be funny and sad and have secrets and also be very open. And, you know, they should have all sorts of things. As far as giving them a voice, think of an actor that you like. Write that, because as it's filtered through you, it's not going to be an impression of that actor. It's going to become a different thing.
Cool.
And any relationship advice you get about relationships applies to a writing partnership. You know, it's about all the, you know, listening and respecting the other person, and their opinion is as valid as yours.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Take it away.
Hi, I'm Nora. You have an advertisement on there for cigarettes, which I know you do it tongue-in-cheek and everything, and I know it's set in the 1940s, you know, radio drama time when they did allow that, but obviously now we don't allow that. I just wonder if there's like an internal conflict in that, or if that's just, oh, well, tough shit, that's what we're doing.
You didn't know it was going to get political, did you?
No, I'm just so anti-smoking.
There's none.
I cringe every time I hear
it.
I'm just
question.
Like, ooh,
that's an
ooh, my
question.
Kid's listening to this.
When it started, it was, we were leaned much more heavily into the radio conceit, and so it felt very much of its time. And I think we kind of made light of, or made fun of, the fact that these are cigarette advertisements. They are not advertisements for cigarettes. They are advertisements for cigarettes. And then, you know, we just have the confidence of our convictions.
And I think cigarettes don't come off well in these ads.
Yeah. No. They really do look like jerks.
They sound horrific.
And every box of cigarettes we sell, we give that money to cancer research.
Yeah. Oh, well, there we go. Okay.
There are no real cigarettes. There are no real Patriot brand cigarettes.
At our booth, 993, you can pick up a carton.
No, there are not. No, they are not duty-free. There are no real cigarettes.
We're just truly free.
There is coffee. There is no cigarettes.
We just come out with menthols.
Guys, we have 4 minutes left.
We just take a carton of Camels and we repackage.
Totally
legal.
Limited edition pack with Mark Aguilar.
I feel 100,000% better. Just
some of you are going to have to come to the booth with your questions.
They're now available in heavy 200s.
Does anyone else have a serious question?
You're going to have to blame your children's cigarette addiction on yourself.
Work to east.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Sally.
Hi, Sally.
Hi. I would like to ask Autumn. I love Amelia Earhart, Fearless Flyer, and my favorite part is the beginning, the back and forth with Amy Adams. I have so many feelings about just that part. And I just want to know, is it as fun to perform as it is to listen to?
It's really fun because I think, I love doing that. I think Amelia's sort of has this secret emotional connection with a lot of the people she comes in contact with, but wants to pretend like she doesn't. And so I love that bit that I get to do with Annie, and especially because we never actually look at each other. They're never in the same room, but they have such a relationship between the two of them.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I'm from Seattle.
Hi, Sarah from Seattle.
I don't know what happened. I walked into the room. They put a tiara on my head.
Yeah.
And
like,
it feels so good.
Callback.
Sobbing. It was crazy.
It feels so good.
But in serious, can you talk a little bit more about Virginia West and like the troubleshooters and the, how you guys came up with the tech of Sparks Nevada and like the AIs? Like, I do tech support and I listen to Sparks Nevada while
you're
I do
a troubleshooter.
Tech support. I am like, they are my people. And so to have both of the main troubleshooters be women and have them be these really intelligent, kick-ass characters, like, thank you so much.
It came out of an episode where, you know, Sparks had a tech support problem that was lethal because it's sci-fi. So just that started us down that path. And the idea that the expression troubleshooter sounds like an old Western, you know, and then to make it that that person could be heroic to Sparks was something we hadn't seen before. And then we got Yvette Nicole Brown agreed to do the show and we were like, yeah, she needs to be that part. Like,
yes.
That's cool.
Yes.
And
she was so cool.
And it came out of there. And then it was a couple of months. I shouldn't say. We plan everything very well all the time. It was a couple of months into that thing, and I think we were talking about, maybe we were all talking about, but what if that was the barkeep's wife that we never see? She fights trouble, and he don't want no trouble. And then we started to really lean into it and plan it, and then there were months that we had planned to make the reveal, and we couldn't get one or the other of them. So it kept building in the suspense on the writing end. And then it was in trying to find a love interest who is equal to Sparks. It's, well, she's got to be a trouble.
Better.
All right, we have to get that last question. We have 1 minute.
I want to get this last question. You can follow up at the booth in 993, and please swing by. Yes, hello.
Hi, I'm Alice.
Hi.
I just had a question for the band. Who's your favorite character to write for?
Oh boy.
Character or actor?
Favorite guest star.
Character. Like, who do you have the most fun, like, writing stories about?
I have to say, all of them are fun. I know it's a cop out, but like, there's not a character in the show that isn't a pleasure to write because they're each very different. So it's always. It takes a little bit, it takes a couple pages of ramping up, and then you are in that character, and it's just a blast.
It's straight up whoever you're currently writing is your favorite, like from line to line.
It's true.
It's got to be.
Sorry, bad answer. Come by booth 993. You can pick up the concert film. It has the Philadelphia ad that Hal mentioned on it. It's one of the bonus features. So booth 993, you can come get that.
Guys, thank you so much for coming to the Thrilling Adventure Hour. Have
no,
a great
like,
rest of your con.
Thank you.
Mark Gagliardi's birthday. Like, Mark
thank
Gagliardi's
you.
Birthday. Sure.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.